This is Kabbalah 99. I'm Deborah Sophia. Today we have on our call Catherine Schoenberg, a transpersonal psychologist, healer, visionary, and teacher with a private practice in New York City. In her 40 years' experience, she has taught thousands of students around the world and created revolutionary tools for clearing physical and emotional disorders. Welcome, Catherine.
Thank you so much.
So you trained as an art historian at the Sorbonne and at the School of the Louvre and was a consultant for UNESCO. And then in 1972, you moved to Israel, where you converted to Judaism and spent 10 years studying the Kabbalah of Light in Jerusalem with Madame Aboulker Muscat, a renowned Kabbalist, mystic, and teacher. You also studied the Rav Zerbib, head rabbi of Oran, Algeria, and Rav Cook, son of the first great rabbi of Israel, the most revered Kabbalist of the 20th century. So welcome. You come with an amazing pedigree, and I'm so looking forward to hearing what you have to say.
Thank you. Thank you. But okay. Those were amazing teachers.
You have a practice that's developed around images using the Kabbalah. Could you say something about that?
Yes, I'm an expert in imagery and dreaming, and I use a Kabbalistic method that's 800 years old. All the work is done by looking inward. So you look inward when you dream. You also look inward if you just turn your eyes in. You have daytime visions or waking dreams. I work with people in that manner by working with their night dreams, but also activating them by having them look inside during the daytime. They can either do what we call a waking dream, which is a long exploration of their subconscious, or I have many exercises that trigger the subconscious, like opening a window and you look through and you see the answer to the question of the exercise.
I see.
So the work is not what we would call a therapeutic work where there's talk. This is always triggering what the subconscious feels and wants to show us.
I see. And what are some of the changes that have happened for people by following your process?
There's so many, I can't even tell you. It's very rapid. And what I mean by that is that you are filled with millions of experiences that gather inside of you and are sensory memories. And when you ask a question of your inside, it responds by showing you images or sensations. The subconscious is there to answer all of your questions. It's the language of your body, really.
Yes, that's very interesting because before speaking with you, I didn't think of my subconscious as being connected with my body. But once you pointed it out, it is true. We do have sensations or what seem like sensations when we dream.
We have sensations all the time. In fact, your subconscious is there all the time, working day and night. Your subconscious is the, as I said, the ground of your being. It accumulates incredible numbers of experiences. And if you ask it, should I do this? The subconscious immediately gathers together the images to respond to your question.
You have something called jolt exercises that helps a person to tap into their subconscious.
Right.
And bypass the conscious. Can you talk a little bit about those?
Well, we need to get out of our mental. Many people are used to thinking with their mental, their cognitive mind, if you want. And we need to short circuit that to tap into the subconscious. When we dream at night, we tap into the subconscious because our mental is asleep, because we are asleep. So then the subconscious can appear. I teach students to look at their subconscious at all times, during the day or during the night. The jolt is there to get you out of your habitual way of thinking and back into the subconscious. I always use this Zen meditation, which goes like this: hear the one hand clapping. And when you hear that, your mind says impossible. At that moment, if you're looking inside, you're going to see something because it has created a short circuit in your mental process and it allows you to see into the subconscious. Now, this does not mean at all that we are refusing to acknowledge our conscious mind. On the contrary, our mental activity is our consciousness that is looking into the subconscious. The two have to happen together. And in your night dream, this is what generally happens because people remember dreams as they're about to wake up. At that moment, your conscious mind is awakening and putting order into all the messages that are appearing in your subconscious. So we need both minds actually to really work together.
Do you recommend people writing down their dreams when they wake up in the morning?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's essential because what is the point of bringing up the subconscious if it doesn't show you, if you do not acknowledge what you're seeing? So you acknowledge it by writing it down, and the dream may be what we call a clear dream. And the clear dream is really the dreams are trying to show you what you need to do. So the next step would be, I've written it down and I see the necessity in the dream. And so I'll close my eyes and continue the dream. I am answering the dream's needs, if you want. This is what makes people transform.
What does it mean to create a palace of light, creating structures that are germane to your body? The palace of light.
The more you are looking into the subconscious, when you think about the subconscious, it's a very strange thing. And when you think about your dreams at night, it's very strange. It's all dark, you're asleep, you're right, and suddenly technicolor. So by looking in, you're creating light. Now, we do that also during the daytime. We look in, and at that moment, by some kind of jolt or a slight little exercise to help, you are creating light inside of yourself. So if you are truly practicing the dreaming, it's a way to enlightenment because every time you do it, you're creating light. Now you've got to do it with intent, of course. That's why we write the dreams. That's why we do the daytime exercises, and all that becomes a movement towards the light. Now, one of the first things that happens when you start looking inside is those things that need to be cleared up. So the first thing is responding to the necessity of the dream. You clean up the house that you seek. Literally, if you see a dusty house or a dusty room, you go back into the dream and you sweep it until it's bright and clean, and you are progressing towards clearing up your subconscious so that you can truly see the deeper part of the subconscious, which we call the superconscious, or if you want, your soul pattern.
Ah, soul pattern. Now, at this point, you're talking about using the capacity for imagery while we're awake.
Yes. I mean, I now teach my students to do that in their dream time, also at night. So they become conscious in their dream time. And if there's a necessity in the dream time because of the intent, you can get your dreaming body to do the repairs or the correction, if you want, or to respond to the necessity of the image in the dream time. You're clearing at a faster pace.
Facilitating the clearing.
Yeah. And if you learn to do that and you do it regularly, you'll see that your daytime difficulties get less and less.
That's fascinating. You mentioned that your subconscious is made of images, that we are made of images. And so that makes me want to ask you, is this world a dream? Are we really just dreaming?
All of it is dreaming. All of it is image. We can't understand the world if it's not shape, what I call information, right? So shape, of course, I have blind students and they can see the shapes very well, actually, but if they're walking in their everyday life, they sense the shapes, they see the colors, they know what they are experiencing inside, what their eyes cannot see on the outside. So everything is made of image, really. The only difference between the night dream and the daytime is that the night dream is in the etheric realm, if you want. So everything moves very fast and flows, and you can go through walls. In the daytime, we have fixed our reality so that the walls are hard and the trees have harder barks and harder trunks. And we walk through snow and you feel the weight of the snow. But in the night dream, you do that very, very quickly, and things can change shape and color very, very quickly in the nighttime.
You mentioned you help people understand their soul's purpose.
Right.
Give me the confidence that each one of us has a purpose.
I can't give you that confidence. You have to experience it on your own. But I can tell you that the more you clean your subconscious, the more you're going to see your life purpose. Everyone comes into this world with really a life purpose. And with some of the young children, you see it immediately. I was talking to you, I think, about this young child who would sit in front of TV watching the stock exchange. I mean, he was 2 years old and he would not allow his parents to change the TV station. He wanted to see the stock exchange. And it turned out, of course, that later on in life, he became a banker. So you see a lot of things like that happening in very, very young kids who are already showing you what they're inclined towards. And that is their soul speaking. You can't create something that is not already in your dreaming. So you can't, for example, visualize a $10,000 check because you want $10,000. You have to ask your dreaming if that's the right amount, if you're allowed to do that, if it's truly your destiny to become a millionaire.
What is the role of destiny and free will in our lives?
The free will is to come back to your soul. The free will is to return to the true alignment which is within you. Most of us have a very hard time doing that because we are caught by the outside world and by all the demands of the outside world, not understanding that by working with the inside world, we make the outside world malleable. But eventually, if you clear and clean your subconscious and come to your soul purpose, it's like coming home. You're just realigning yourself to what you're meant to do. Where does that come from? Well, we can't explain that, like we can't explain why certain animals live a certain way and others live another way, right? It's their purpose. Each one of us has a role to play in this world, and we fit into the ecosystem in that way. If we are not listening, we're going to make a lot of errors. And they hurt. Those errors will hurt.
You mentioned ecosystem, and I think you're referring to both an outer and an inner ecosystem.
Right. I don't see any difference. You know, when the flowers peak up and start to blossom in a certain way, they're answering their own inner need, but also an outside need, right? So that the two kind of evolve at the same time.
Well, you talked about this world is malleable, the physical world is malleable. How do we realize that and have things happen in a more harmonious way around us?
Well, I can't tell you any other way than what I'm already describing to you, which is you start learning to pay attention to what your inside is saying and then following it, really taking it seriously. So if your dream says, get up today and give this phone call, you do get up and give the phone call. I had a student who had come to me because she was in her 30s and not married and not meeting a man. And one day she comes in with a dream that says, pick up the phone and call this person. And I said to her, have you called this person? She'd had the dream the week before. Have you called this person? No. I gave her the phone.
Then what happened?
She married him.
Well, that was good guidance. That was good guidance. So, is this really a world of relationships? We tend to look at objects. You know, this is a tree, this is a desk, that's Joe over there and Susan over here. So, it's a world of objects. But perhaps the reality is more this is a world of relationship.
It's a world of relationship. This is a world where everything is conscious. We forget that. When we look at the tree, it's conscious. When we look at the frog, it's conscious. Oh, everything is, our body is conscious, right? So we forget to relate to ourselves and others and the trees, the birds, and so forth as conscious beings. When we do that, then everything becomes much easier.
Is there a self? Do I really exist as a separate self, different from anybody else?
Yeah, there
Okay.
is, because you have a form that is different, but you are part of the larger ecosystem. So we are all one in that sense. But because your form is slightly different than other people's forms, then you make an impression. You're impressing yourself on the world in a different way. One of the things I always just teach, especially with relationships with couples and when they're not getting along, if I'm working with only one of them, I get them to look inside and start changing their inner form. Let's say that they're always angry with the partner, and that's their inner form. And so I make them work with that until suddenly it's no longer anger, it's something else that they're feeling. And lo and behold, they go home, and the partner is suddenly sweet and nice to them. So the more we work on that, the more the outside world starts to respond.
So it's the
Because
image we carry that
it
impacts the
exactly.
results.
Right.
Okay.
So if I'm frightened, I'll be like a, let's say, like a cave, and I'll inevitably be attracting something that will go like a ball into the cave, right? If I don't want to be the cave anymore and I change my form and I become a straight rock, if you want, then the ball will not go into me and this will change the relationship. Inevitably, the other one will change their form if they want to have a relationship with me.
This is very valuable information for living in this world. It seems the primary world is the inner world, and the outer world reflects the inner world.
Absolutely.
And what happens when you die?
You just lose this body. You go through the door. Definitely the soul goes and comes back with its consciousness.
Continuity of consciousness, then
Is
that's
a
interesting.
continuity of consciousness, yeah. And that
So,
to me is how it works.
you have something called dream opening. It's a language of the body, and that there are four levels of the dream.
Right.
Would you share that with us?
Yeah. It's based on the story of the Talmud about four rabbis who meditate, deciding to go to the Garden of Eden. And the first one goes and he sees the garden. And he looks at the garden as if it's a story. So here's the garden. I'm walking through the garden. That's his story. The second one comes up and he looks at the garden and he sees the pattern. Oh, there are two cypress trees on the left and there's a pond on the right and two cypress trees further out on the right. So he sees the patterns and the connections. The third one comes up and he sees the story. He's walking through the garden, he sees the patterns, but he also sees what it means to him, how he responds to it. So that's what we would call drash or the interpretation, what I feel about it, right? And so when we do a dream opening, we're sitting in a round circle and the original dreamer puts the dream into the circle, which is a sacred space, and each one of the dreamers becomes the secondary dream of the dream and gives their perspective. Deborah's perspective is going to be different from my perspective or from another person's perspective. When we've done that, there is a growing of the consciousness around the meaning of the dream, and the the dreamer, the original dreamer, will then respond, this resonated with me. Oh, yes, this really brought to mind what this was all about. And so that's the fourth level, which is called sod, or the treasure. Right?
So it's the response.
It's the response, yeah. Now, this is a method I developed for my students so they would understand quickly what image is meant, because they're all, mainly I'm working with trainees at this point. They needed to be able to listen to what a person was seeing or to see a dream and be able to understand immediately what the dream was trying to say.
You're training people to do the work you're doing to carry it forward.
Exactly. Yeah, this is a very old lineage. It's 800 years old. It's a direct lineage all the way to my teacher, Colette Aboulker Muscat. And it comes from the south of France. There were many Kabbalists in the south of France. The great center was in a place called Pousquières in the south of France. And it was run by a man, I'll give you the name that everybody knows him under, Isaac the Blind. Now, he wasn't blind, but he was looking inward, and that's why he was called Isaac the Blind, like Isaac in the Bible, who was also blind.
It's a metaphor. And yeah. He developed a way of working with Kabbalah.
He was a Kabbalist, and he looked inward into the dreaming and worked with the dreaming and with light. That's why we also call it the Kabbalah of light, because each time you look in, you're creating light.
And again, you're talking about dreaming when you're sleeping, but also using your imaginal ability when you're awake.
Exactly. Okay. You're always, always dreaming. You just are not looking at it all the time because you're attracted by your mental cogitations or being attracted by the world outside. I teach my students to be able to do the two at once. If I'm talking to you, I look at you, I see how you're dressed, what you look like, and so forth. But inside, I'm also looking at the vision I have of you.
That's very interesting. You developed a program for people who want to have children, a dream birthing approach that starts prior to conception. Could you speak a little bit about that?
Yes. To me, it's all an energetic movement. So if two young people want to have children, they need to prepare the space for that. And so we do a lot of cleaning and clearing of their subconscious and their spaces. There could have been fears that came from the lineage or miscarriages that made the woman fearful. There could have been abortions that need to be cleared out so that eventually the space is clean. Now, with the partner, there could be other issues of importance to him that need to be cleared out, such as his fear of responsibility or being able to create abundance or being able to protect or being fearful that she will forget about him and she'll take care only of the child and he won't exist anymore. So there are lots of fears. We clear that up. We have a method for determining when is the best time of conception, which has to do with patterns, family patterns. And so when the time is ripe, I have specific exercises to call in a soul that's going to fit them. Because if you do that when you're angry, you may be calling in a soul that is angry. It's all about consciousness. So my pattern of consciousness is a certain way. I'm going to be attracting that. The child comes in because of patterns of consciousness.
The way you were using your hands, it's like vibrations.
See that as vibrations. But vibrations that if we look at them at the level of dreaming, then would become images, right? But it's all energetic. So the soul is attracted to the parents because they love each other or because they need to be healed or because we have exercises to figure that out with people. Right.
And I noticed it is a program on your website. People can choose to enroll in that online program. Is it a recorded program that goes on whenever, self-paced? Yeah. Okay.
Dream Birth is a program. One of my students, who's a doula, who initiated the whole program by bringing me a, a group of doulas and midwives who worked with me for 7 years. So they would ask me what they needed, and then I would write the exercise and they would do the exercise. We would check on them, right? So that's what initiated dream birth. It's not only just calling the soul in, the best possible soul. And this is the Kabbalistic notion. The Kabbalah thinks you can call on a saintly soul to come into you. But then after that, there's all the pregnancy, how you can connect to the child in the womb, how you can talk to it, how you can actually change physical situations in the womb by doing the images.
And you mentioned something about twins. One was doing well and the other wasn't.
Yeah. So we created a specific exercise to bring more sustenance to the one that wasn't doing well. The doctor thought he would die. And 2 weeks later, on the sonogram, he was perfectly healthy. Those twins were born perfectly healthy. Using the images is an incredibly powerful tool. Many of the Olympic athletes use imagery, right, to help them to develop athletically. But there's much more to the imagery than just imagining how you're going to move. You can use the images to help heal yourself, to help your child in the womb, to close wounds. There's so many, many possibilities. Anything is possible because, I mean, the basis of your being is the energetic movement that then becomes an image, and you can work with the image to make it healthy and harmonious.
Can we do a practice, a short one?
Well, we can do one on anxiety.
Oh, terrific. So many
people are anxious these days.
Yes.
So close your eyes and imagine breathing out your anxiety as a black smoke. And you see that the black smoke goes into the sky, a dark smoke goes into the sky and becomes a little cloud. And then continue to breathe out the anxiety, seeing the little cloud get a little bigger. And as you continue to breathe out, how all the anxiety leaves your body, and eventually your breath becomes clear. And you tell me when the breath is clear. You just continue to breathe until the breath becomes very clear, just transparent.
Okay.
And when that happens, then breathe out strongly to break the cloud into thousands of pieces. Breathe out a second time and see all the pieces dissolving in the blue sky. And breathing out a third time, the sky is completely clear and blue. And now slowly breathe out three times, counting from 3 to 1. When you come to the 1, you're breathing out, breathe in the blue light from the sky through your nostrils into your mouth, and blow it as a path of blue light in front of you. And start walking on that blue light, knowing that you're protected and it's going to guide you to your optimal future. And breathing out, open your eyes.
Well, thank you. That was really lovely.
Yeah.
So you also have a course on morphology. I know it's that something about form, but I don't know very much about it. Could you share some insights?
Well, you know, this is really about the shape of the body and how we are all affected by the shape of a person, right? Their coloring, their hair, their body type, we're affected by it. But what's important, and the reason why I teach it and my teacher also taught it, it was all the way down the lineage it was taught, is because shape affects the way you are in the world. So if you have a big rounded nose and a round face, you're going to be very receptive to the world. But if you have, let's say, a rectangular shape and a very triangular nose, you're not going to receive the world in the same way. So the best way to think about it is just to enter into that shape. So to imagine your nose becoming a very pointy triangular nose, what changes in you emotionally? What changes in your energy, right? There's a whole series of grids that they learn that allow them to instantly look at a person they're with and understand how they feel and how they think and how they move in the world. So it's extremely useful, and also teaches them to have respect in a way that is extraordinarily effective. I have some students who only do morphology, and they've done it. Some of them have been here 20 years with me. They really study that, and something happens inside of them. They are now looking at the other with respect and interest, because they can feel how their bodies move.
That gets back to how this is a world of relationship, and that the inner world, our inner attunement, matters.
Very much so. And the other thing is not to think that we are fixated by our morphology. We have always choices in the morphology. We're not prototypes. We're actually individuals with many different forms in our body and how they relate and interact to each other. And if we look at the face, there are two sides to the face, the right and the left. And if we look at that seriously, one side or then the other, we'll see two different characters. So they're choices that can be made always.
I like your emphasis on choices and the malleability of our life experience, our experience in the world.
It is completely malleable, except that we have a soul pattern, and the soul pattern makes our body, and we have to take the choices that are for our highest good.
Do you see a transformation happening in human beings?
Totally. And in fact, very fast, if they work with the subconscious. If they are just talking about it, that's a world they know where they feel that it hasn't worked. So sometimes they're lucky, and in the process, they have an insight and a revelation. But if you work directly with the subconscious really makes all the true choices, right? So if you work directly with it, you have a much better access. And of course, the subconscious is all about transformation. It's about shape-shifting. So I can look at a dark room and see a sliver of light, and then the student will see that, and I'll say, well, why don't you walk towards a sliver of light and open that? And suddenly there's another world, right? And that creates the revelation and the transformation, because they were in a very bad mood before that, and they felt depressed and nothing was possible. And suddenly they've opened that door and it's flooded with light, and they walk out and they're in a different world. It's so powerful and quick. It completely shows you the truth, because the language of the body always shows you the truth. So the language of the subconscious shows you the truth.
People can learn more about this by your online classes, but also, do you work one-on-one with people if someone wanted to have a consultation with you?
I do, yeah.
And they should reach out to you through your website, schoolofimages.com.
Through the website, and there's a contact for the school, and definitely they can reach out.
Thank you.
I'm not available. There are a number of fabulous young teachers who are doing the work also.
Talking with you is always so fascinating, and it opens so many possibilities. Do you have any final words of encouragement to our listeners?
I think that people are despondent or despairing, and they have every reason to be, but I think this is a great shift in consciousness, and that we're undergoing that. It hurts every time we change, but if we realize this is kind of exciting, maybe instead of being caught in the old patterns and the busyness that has been the hallmark of what was happening in the last years, maybe we can reach into a new type of consciousness, and I believe it's coming, and I believe it's very exciting. And I do believe that we're going to come to a greater understanding of the flow of relationships between all species. And this is the way we're going to heal our world and its ecology and our own inner ecology at the same time. So I'm very excited.
A very hopeful message.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Catherine. I so enjoy speaking with you, and I hope that our listeners will go to your website, schoolofimages.com, and see what you have to offer, because it would be life-changing.
Thank you so much, Deborah. Thank you.
For more mind-heart awakenings like these, you can follow us on this podcast and on our blog at Kabbalah 99. That's where we discuss the weekly Torah portion through the lens of today's challenges and offer practices to stay sane, grounded, and connected. If you like this episode, please remember to tell one friend about it. Next week, we'll hear from another thought leader who will help us to explore our experience of life and our place in this universe of wonder. Thanks for listening. I'm Deborah Sophia. See you next week.